Welcome to the In Development Podcast. My name is Lilith.
And my name is Allison, and this is the podcast for all you city builders, city shapers, and city dwellers that care about driving change towards people-centered communities. On In Development, we talk about how Canadian cities develop in and up. We are presented by IDEA, the Infill Development and Edmonton Association, which is a nonprofit education and advocacy group bringing together like-minded people working to shape our city.
So our guest today is Jonathan Lee. He's currently on IDEA's board, serving as a member at large. He supports the organization with initiatives such as affordable housing and green infrastructure. Jonathan is also a real estate development executive and a professional engineer. He's experienced in the acquisition, financing, development, and sales of large real estate assets and was named one of Edmonton's top 40 under 40 by Avenue Magazine. He has also received the Green Building Pioneer Award. Honorable mention. Throughout his career, Jonathan has been actively involved in industry associations such as the Urban Development Institute and the Canadian Home Builders Association. Jonathan has also served as a director for the Alberta chapter of the Canada Green Building Council. Jonathan's current role is Vice President of Projects with HomeEd, which is a nonprofit organization that provides affordable rentals.
So we had a great conversation with Jonathan about affordable housing and the current context in Edmonton. He had really great insight into some of the housing trends over the past 30 years that have contributed to our city's current housing needs. And in particular, he had really, really helpful knowledge for us to understand like what Edmonton's current affordable housing needs are and how HomeEd is helping to meet that demand. So before we get into our main discussion with Jonathan, there's just a few things that we wanted to provide some background information on. So the first is the City of Edmonton's Affordable Housing Strategy. So this document outlines the city's short and long-term objectives for affordable housing over a four-year timeframe. So that's from 2023 to 2026. And this strategy really has three main goals: that Edmontonians have access to affordable housing in all areas of the city, that Edmontonians have the housing supports that they need, and lastly, increase awareness of housing needs and the importance of affordable housing. We've included a link to the strategy in the show notes. We just encourage everyone to take a look at that and see how Edmonton is planning to address some of our affordable housing needs in the coming years.
We also had a couple of CMHC-related loan definitions. So CMHC being the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, for those of you who don't know the acronym. The first loan is the MLI Select Loan. So this is a new multi-unit mortgage loan insurance product. It uses a point system to offer incentives based on housing affordability, energy efficiency, as well as accessibility. So these incentives are for new construction as well as existing properties. The second loan definition is ACLP. So this is this stands for Apartment Construction Loan Program, and it provides low-cost funding to eligible borrowers during most risky phases of their product development. Eligible borrowers could include municipalities, non-for-profit developers, as well as for-profit developers. The ACLP program also includes a CMHC mortgage loan insurance within it. So that's pretty cool.
All right. I think that ends the definitions that we wanted to provide for you. So let's get into our discussion with Jonathan right now. Welcome to the show, Jonathan. We're really excited to have you on the podcast today.
Well, thank you very much, Allison and Lilith. It's a pleasure to be here. I love talking about affordable housing.
Awesome. Before we get into the main part of our discussion on that topic, we just want to learn a little bit more about who you are. So can you tell us, like, what's your background? How did you get involved with the development industry? How did you get involved with IDEA?
Sure. So I'm a civil engineer by training. I went to school here at the U of A. And then I worked as a consulting engineer for a few years before one of my clients hired me and pulled me into the real estate development industry. I've been here for the last 12 or so years, building great real estate. I've fallen in love with the industry. It's taken me across over to BC and back. And when I came back, the City of Edmonton was looking for some help growing their affordable housing inventory. And I put my hand and said, I'd love to do that. I've been doing it for the last 3 years. And it's been a fantastic adventure.
That's amazing. I certainly would have not guessed at first that you were an engineer, Jonathan. I thought for some reason you were a planner at first. It's nice to know.
I'll take that as a compliment, I think, Lilith.
Every occupation has their talents, right? As their abilities, their pros and cons. So I definitely didn't mean it in any in any way that you should get offended. That's for sure. I know lots of great engineers that I work with over at my firm. And yes, sometimes I wish I could do what they do.
Well, and if anything, you're outnumbered because I'm also a former engineer. So
that's right.
You have to watch what you say, Lilith, because that's true.
You have some interprovincial experience, Jonathan, and then eventually your path led you back to Edmonton. And you were, from what I understand, started getting involved with HOMET. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And so it's been, HOMET is owned by the City of Edmonton. It's the city's affordable housing provider. HOMET owns and operates about 1,300 units of affordable housing spread around Edmonton, apartment buildings, townhouse complexes, and it's been doing that since 1977. So I'm a relatively new addition to the team at HOMET, but we've been really busy doing some pretty remarkable things over the last few years growing during that time.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit more about your role at HOMET? Like what are your goals and sort of your position within the organization?
I'm the vice president of projects at HOMET, which in a nutshell means that my job is to make HOMET bigger. And I do that primarily by buying real estate, either pieces of land that we can build on and then taking them through the construction process, or by buying operating rental, townhomes and apartment buildings. So in the last 3 years, we've been doing just that. And we've bought 144 units in Clairview, right next to the rec center, stacked townhomes. And we bought a beautiful infill site in Abbotsfield, 248 units next to Abbotsfield Mall. Used to be a burned out McDonald's, great infill project. And then we've bought a couple of other sites around Edmonton and two development pieces, two pieces of land for new development, one in North Edmonton and one in South Edmonton that we're working on right now.
That's really great to hear, Jonathan, about all the growth you're overseeing with HOMET. And, you know, since you told us at the beginning of this episode how much you love to talk about affordable housing, I was thinking a really good question for you is, what is affordable housing? I know this term gets used a lot, and sometimes it means slightly different things depending on what municipality or jurisdiction you're in. So what does that mean in Edmonton?
Yeah, thanks, Lilith. That is really core to our conversation. So in Edmonton, we're really fortunate that market housing providers, builders and developers, have been doing a great job of ensuring that housing is affordable for most people. About seven out of eight households in Edmonton can afford market-provided housing. And so Allison used a great term recently when we were having a discussion around housing affordability, right? What can you be able to buy or rent for most Edmontonians? But about one in eight Edmontonian households can't afford even that. And so affordable housing, as we use the term, covers all the forms of housing that are below the market. So that takes us all the way from helping people with houselessness or homelessness, so transitional and shelter housing, all the way up through supportive housing that helps people with mental health and addictions issues, all the way up to community housing that's very deep subsidy, and into the near market affordable housing, which is housing for people and families that just can't quite afford to be in the market and need some amount of subsidy. In Edmonton, we define that number for most people as 80% of the average market rate for the city. And so for a two-bedroom apartment, two-bedroom apartment, that would translate out to about $1,100 per month.
To add to your statistics, Jonathan, back when I was a university student at U of A, taking a planning course, we had a course on affordable housing. And at the time, our instructor told us that, market housing, not even affordable housing, should cost households about 30% of their income. And at the time, this was years ago, that was not necessarily an attainable thing for a lot of people who were spending more than 30% of their income on housing. So is that number still at 30%, or has that been shifted?
No, that's still the definition that's used, Lilith. And people who fall below that, or in other words, they are spending more than 30% of their income on their housing, are considered to be in core housing need.
So a lot of Edmontonians are.
About one of these households, about 45,000 households in Edmonton.
So I guess this is a good time to ask. So what does Home Ed focus on when you guys are providing affordable housing and trying to help meet those core housing needs for Edmontonians?
Allison, if you think about that entire spectrum that we discussed, that goes all the way from helping people who don't have a home to live in, all the way up to the market. Edmonton has some wonderful providers that are working on transitional or shelter housing, deep subsidy housing. HomeEd's role is in that near market space. So HomeEd provides housing to people like single mothers, new Canadians, students, seniors on fixed income, and ACE recipients who are unable to work. That's the core of our housing mandate. And so our rents are typically at that 70 to 80% of that average market rent.
I'm glad that you brought up like the types of individuals or families that need affordable housing, because I think often the perception of affordable housing is that it's for like very specialized types of housing or specialized individuals, kind of what we were talking about before, where you say affordable housing also includes transitional and supportive housing, but it also just includes, yeah, like the single parent who might work at a grocery store or, you know, just has an average job, but is in core housing need. And I think people often don't realize that those are the types of folks that we're talking about, or maybe it's their great aunt who lives by herself, right?
It's interesting, Allison, that in both the examples that you gave, you refer to households that are led by women. And one of the things that's really significant in Edmonton is over a third of women-led households are in core housing need.
Do you know why that might be?
I think there's a lot of reasons for that are related to employment and family characteristics. So we have a lot of women with us in home ed who would work at jobs in, say, the retail sector or hospitality. A lot of women who are parents and may need more flexibility from a part-time job to meet their parenting responsibilities. That makes it more difficult for them to have a full-time or more professional job.
In my research, and I've done some research in the past year about women aging in cities and the Canadian context. I certainly don't know specifically the Edmonton context, but federal statistics, at least national statistics, show that women tend to live longer than men. So they tend to outlive their spouses and end up living alone in a household. And I don't know what the average pension is. Is it $1,500 a month? Is it $2,000 a month? You know, Edmonton is still one of the most affordable cities in Canada, but that's certainly not the case everywhere else.
Yeah, and that's even in Edmonton, there are still seniors on fixed income who are in core housing needs. HomeEd does house some of them. We have some great partners in the not-for-profit sector, though, that focus on seniors housing, like the Greater Edmonton Foundation.
Okay, kind of not switching gears, but what are some of the other trends around affordable housing in Edmonton? And what are some of the gaps that Edmonton has been experiencing in the past years?
So one of the challenges that Edmonton has is very little rental, purpose-built rental, was constructed in Edmonton after about 1990. So if you have a look at the amount of rental housing, purpose-built rental housing available in Edmonton, it peaked around 1990 and then steadily dropped off, partly due to condominiumization of rental housing, and then started to grow again in the last few years. But it wasn't until 2022 that the level of purpose-built rental stock in Edmonton reached the same as it was in 1990. And in that time period, Edmonton's population doubled. So we have effectively half the rental stock that we did, purpose-built rental stock that we did in 1990. There's just less out there to rent compared to the population.
So Jonathan, do you know what the differences are right now between the demand that we see currently for people who are waiting to get into these homes versus how much building stock we have?
We need housing for thousands and thousands and thousands of households here in Edmonton. And as our population grows, that demand is only increasing.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing, you know, an increase for demand in the last year. The vacancy rate in Edmonton has gone down. I think it's the lowest that it's been in like over a decade. And, you know, we've got lots of people moving to Edmonton. And I think we're going to continue to see that because compared to other cities in Canada, like Vancouver and Toronto, Edmonton is still really affordable. And I think we're going to continue to see that migration to Alberta, whether it's Edmonton or Calgary, and a combination of the two. So those demands will just continue to be there. And if we don't start providing more housing, whether that's just affordable housing or just like market housing, we need both of those things and we need more of them now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not just vacancy rates going down, you know, driving this change in rent increases for people who don't own their homes, also people who own homes who rent them out potentially pay much more in interest right now. And that's also causing, you know, rental rates to go up for people and make housing further less affordable for Edmontonians. So there are, from what I've seen and heard from different experts in our industries, there are just so many different contributing factors in this, and not a single, you know, solution can fix this. This needs to be a concerted effort between different players in the city to make a dent in this. What do you think about that, Jonathan? Am I interpreting these expert opinions correctly? Do you agree with that, or do you have a different outlook on this?
It's certainly what we're seeing, Lilith. As Allison alluded to, our vacancy rate is under 2% right now, which is just basically our normal turnover rate. We're full. Our properties are full. Renewals are very high. Demand is very high, and particularly demand for family-oriented housing, which is undersupplied in the purpose-built rental market, which tends to focus more on apartment buildings. And in terms of solutions, from my perspective, well, it really comes down to supply. Edmonton has a relatively low cost of housing compared to other markets like Toronto and Vancouver that you mentioned, largely because of our supply. We're relatively well supplied and continuing to supply more inventory. You know, the hard work that IDEA members and others do to make sure there's more and more and more housing getting built, including densifying our existing neighborhoods, means that there's will continue to be houses available for people that need them as Edmonton grows.
I have a question for you about rentals and sort of like condos versus purpose-built rentals, because obviously there's a lot of condos that are rented out as apartment units, right? And then we have purpose-built apartment buildings. Is there a benefit to having the purpose-built rental versus having condos that are rented out to folks?
All rentals are good rentals for people that need them.
Sure.
But there are a couple of key advantages to purpose-built rentals for people who are in core housing need. One is that they tend to be more stable over time. So a building that's been built to be a rental will tend to be a rental for many, many decades, whereas an individual condo unit might be rented out for a short period of time and then be sold, or the owner may decide to live in it or have a family member live in it. And so there's less stability inherent to the secondary rental market, the condo rental market. That's a big factor. The other thing is, for people who are in core housing need that have additional needs beyond just housing, you know, they might have need supports for mental health or addiction services or other things, they're able to be provided those in a much more effective way when they're able to live together and get those supports together. And that's the role that supportive housing, which is a form of affordable housing, fills.
And I imagine it might be purpose-built rentals or have processes that are a bit more formalized than what you'd get with a landlord who's renting out their dwelling unit from the secondary market.
Yeah, there can be more certainty around who the other tenants are, just depending on the landlord. So the vetting process, reference checks, credit checks, criminal record checks that go along with formal rentals may or may not be there in a secondary market suite.
So then with you mentioned access to other resources, you know, not just having a place to live. Out of curiosity, are there any home ed owned properties where they provide these resources to the renters there?
That's a great question, Lilit. Home Ed's focus is on housing for people who don't need additional supports. They need a safe, stable home, and we're able to provide that and maintain it well. But our housing doesn't provide additional mental health or addiction supports. There are other housing providers in Edmonton that specialize in that space and are very effective at providing those supports to their tenants.
It's insane to think about how large this industry is and how many different needs there are, and how you know, each type of need almost needs to be specialized, you know, based on the unique needs of each household or a person. So this is definitely, it seems like this is a lot larger than what I originally thought, this industry of the near market homes, the affordable homes, and what have you. Well, the spectrum goes on, as you said, right?
And that's why, when you think about, if 1 in 8 Edmonton households are in core housing need, well, how diverse is Edmonton? Like, if you just think about your neighborhood, right, or neighborhoods around you, how diverse are the people who live in them? And so it's not surprising that in the affordable housing space, where there's 1 in 8 in core housing need, that they're a diverse group of people and they have a diverse group of needs, including needs to support them in their housing.
That's a really good way to think about it, because I think sometimes people sort of get hyper-focused on like one specific area. But when we think about like Edmonton as a city, we really have to think about it citywide, and like, how do we provide affordable housing for the city? So I know that the city of Edmonton has the affordable housing strategy, which aims to do just that. So can you tell us a little bit more about the strategy and what it's supposed to do for Edmonton?
I'm really happy you brought that up, Allison. And for anyone who's listening, please go find it on the Edmonton website, download it, read it. It's a really good read for understanding where the needs in Edmonton are, where the gaps are, and also what the city is doing to tackle some of those issues. It's a comprehensive document that talks about both the issues and solutions in a number of different ways. A few of the key ones we've already spoken about: the number of Edmontonian households that need affordable housing, the kinds of housing that they require, the demographics, who's included in those numbers, what do they look like, what is their experience in housing, and then also the steps that the city itself is taking. The folks in affordable housing at the City of Edmonton are the best people to answer questions about the housing strategy. They're the ones that put it together. We get to be part of the solution over at Home Ed to deliver on some aspects of the strategy: building more, buying more, housing more households.
So you mentioned that Home Ed is, I guess, if I understand correctly, Home Ed is supporting the City of Edmonton in implementing the strategies outlined in this affordable housing report. So I'm wondering for Home Ed, is it just, you know, acquiring more, building more, providing more units, or is there something beyond that that Home Ed is also focusing on?
In some ways, it's about how we're doing those things. So more units are great, but we also have to think about more units for whom and more units where. So Home Ed's focus tends to be on family housing. That's where we see a big need. And a lot of those are women-led households. And so we think really carefully about our unit mix as we're buying or building. Our development focus is on townhomes. A lot of the units that we've bought are multi-bedroom, three-bedroom units, because we're really focused on providing good, quality, stable, affordable housing to families. Where also matters in a few ways. A lot of our tenants, it may not be surprising, a lot of our tenants are transit users. So we bought stacked townhomes right next to the Clairview LRT station because the tenants are transit users. Our Rundle purchase, the great infill project in Abbotsfield, is right next to the Riverview Crossing Mall, where there's a transit station. Now, these are very deliberate choices to locate our housing near transit for transit users. And the other thing that we're interested in is not oversaturating parts of the city with affordable housing. People who need affordable housing need affordable housing in all parts of the city, right? My hairdresser needs affordable housing, right? The cashier at my grocery store needs affordable housing. And so those aren't things that happen just in the core of Edmonton. Those are services that all of us rely on in all of our neighborhoods.
As you're describing, you know, this assessment that you do to geolocate potential spots for, you know, future affordable housing projects. In my mind, I'm just thinking Home Ed probably has like a GIS team, if not department, working to like do the spatial analysis and the buffers with like ArcGIS, and just brings back memories from school. It's a really useful tool. If I imagine that's how you do it, but I don't know. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, I wish it was that fancy, Lil. I wish I had a giant team doing it. The reality is, one, it's we're all Edmontonians, so we know our city. But when we're evaluating sites, we're using tools like city maps that are GIS-based, Google Maps, which is GIS-based, and just doing surveys of the surrounding services, transit access, grocery store locations, school locations, all easily available public information.
When you were talking about, you know, not oversaturating particular areas with affordable housing, does the city have like a baseline that they try to achieve for the amount of affordable housing in neighborhoods?
City Council has indicated that the goal for Edmonton is 16% of units in every neighborhood will be affordable. Now, some neighborhoods in the core of Edmonton are higher than that, but the vast majority of neighborhoods in Edmonton are in the 0 to 5% range, and many of them closer to zero. And that's not surprising because of the way that Edmonton's been built out over the years. But the opportunity as we infill the city is there for us to increase the amount of affordable housing. And that's really specifically what Home Ed is working to achieve. It also helps that the best transit access in the city is also in infill neighborhoods, and our tenants rely on public transit. So those two things go hand in hand really well.
Yeah, exactly. And like with the expansion of the Valley Line LRT, I think that's going to open up the opportunity for a lot more neighborhoods to have better access to transit. Because, you know, historically in the neighborhoods outside of, you know, our one train line, you're relying on bus transit centers. But now we are potentially in a position where all of those existing bus transit centers will exist. But now we have an LRT system that can also be really beneficial for providing transit access in neighborhoods that may not have had great transit previously and may not, you know, have been as desirable for the types of projects that you guys would do previously.
Yeah, it certainly supports a more diverse type of housing. as infill occurs along major transit routes, especially train routes.
So with HomeMed focusing a lot of their developments, from what I understand, in these areas that are in proximity to transit, I'm just curious, with acquiring land and building affordable housing on that land in the mature neighborhoods, when we're talking about infill, what are some challenges associated with that when you look at these sites?
Well, one is land availability. You know, as all of IDEA's members know, it can be really hard getting good land to do development on. For us, we're not developing duplexes or triplexes. We're working at a larger scale. So we need sites that are, a couple, 3 acres in size that we can deliver a large enough project to get the efficiencies of scale that we require, not just during construction, but also over the long-term operations of the sites. Finding those sites is a lot more challenging, those larger sites. And for us, we have access to, in some cases, city land or government land that's been made available for affordable housing. In Edmonton, some of those sites are surplus school sites. So around the city, there are neighborhoods that were built in the 80s or the 90s that have a dedicated school site on them that's owned by the city. But the school boards are not using that site and have said that they will never use the site. And so the city has determined that those sites will be used instead for affordable housing. So what that means for residents in those neighborhoods is that that site is probably a soccer field right now, maybe a baseball diamond. And they've been using it that way for 20 or 30 years. And now a developer like HomeMed comes along and we tell the neighborhood, it's time for the site to have the use it's been intended for, which is affordable housing. We're very understanding that for people who live in that neighborhood and are used to it being a park site, seeing go from park to affordable housing can feel like they're really losing something in their neighborhood. And in some neighborhoods in Edmonton, all the housing is kind of the same. And most of us grew up in Edmonton, in, a 1,200 square foot bungalow in a neighborhood full of nothing but 1,200 square foot bungalows. And so when you bring in not a high density, but just a medium density, like a townhome project into one of these neighborhoods, not only may that neighborhood be giving up what they've been using as a soccer field, but also the form of housing is going to look different and be at a different density than a lot of the rest of the neighborhood. And that change can feel uncomfortable for residents as well. So we understand when we're doing infill development that change can be a difficult thing for the neighborhood.
I actually have 2 points. One is, I think I'm in a serious need of reality check, because I thought there was like school shortages in the region and we needed more school space. So I guess that's not necessarily a thing anymore. And two, I've worked on several affordable housing projects with developers who've taken the opportunity, the CMHC grants. And one thing I've noticed is, in addition to public concerns about additional density, too much traffic, not enough parking, or a potential safety, there's that additional piece of, this is affordable housing. What types of people are moving in here? And that is a serious concern that we as planners have to deal with when we work on projects like this. And we need to learn how to, break these misrepresentations of, people who are just in need of affordable housing.
Yeah, that's a great point, Lilith. And when we do community engagement, we certainly hear that concern. And the thing that we go back to is, Who are people who need affordable housing? And for the infill that we do, the demographics that we're serving is primarily families, right? And so we're bringing more families to a neighborhood. Our tenants are long-term tenants in most cases. They have stable employment, stable income. They just need a place that they can live that's a little more affordable. And to be able to do that in a neighborhood where maybe their parents live, right? Or maybe their grandparents live and they grew up in, they can continue to be part of that community even if there's not housing in that neighborhood, because they're all, you know, very large, 2,500 to 3,000 square foot single family homes that they can't afford otherwise.
Yeah, I think kind of going back to what Lilith was saying about like surplus school sites and thinking that there is need for capacity, it depends on where you are in the city. Like certain areas of the city have higher like demands for schools that can't be met within that particular area. But then in some of the mature neighborhoods, because those neighborhoods have sort of emptied out over the years and have had a population decline, or all of the families that had kids in the 80s and 90s have all grown up and left, and the demographic hasn't sort of started to shift over. So you end up with places like, you know, the site that you were talking about, Jonathan, that you guys are going to be redeveloping. Yeah, there probably wasn't a need for a school, but in other areas of the city there are. But you can't, you know, it's generally we don't bus elementary school kids 10 kilometers to their school, right? Unless they're attending some sort of specialized school. So it's really provided like locally in those neighborhoods. So I think there's that constant like push and pull of like where the demand is versus where the actual infrastructure is for schools, right? So that's challenging, but then we get these larger sites, which are great opportunity to do affordable housing, right? Because you can provide a fairly substantial amount of housing within that area that you wouldn't necessarily need be able to otherwise.
Interesting. I need to catch up on planning open spaces and municipal reserve sites in Edmonton.
I mean, that's a big can of worms. Quite
a large one, I imagine. Yes.
Yeah. I kind of going back just more generally about affordable housing, like what does Edmonton need to do to increase the amount of affordable housing to help meet the core housing needs that we have?
Well, some of the things the city is already doing, right? So we recently went through the new zoning bylaw change that dramatically increase the flexibility of our zonings that supports infill development. And the city released its affordable housing strategy that we discussed earlier. It gets at some really specific ways that the city and its development partners in the development industry can continue to supply housing and meet the needs of people in Edmonton. But a lot of it is what IDEAS members are doing already. I mean, the fact is that although 1 in 8 households in Edmonton are in core housing need, 7 out of 8 households in Edmonton have housing that they can attain and afford. And that means that the development industry is doing a good job keeping housing costs down by keeping supply up. So if it continues to do that, it will help ensure that the vast majority of households in Edmonton continue to have housing that they can afford and attain, and allow housing providers to work on the 1 out of 8 households that continue to need support for them to have safe, stable, quality housing. And to do that requires ongoing government support. It's just the nature of affordable housing.
So I'm just wondering, how have the recent updates to the Edmonton zoning bylaw have helped you? I'm assuming they've helped you immensely. Has it helped you find parcels that are suitable, you know, because you can now look for potentially smaller parcels or less of them to be able to fit more units in?
Again, for us, because we're working at a larger scale, the impacts are a little bit different than the flexibility that someone might have redeveloping a single family lot. But where we see the differences are primarily on two parts. One is the setbacks. So we've got a little more wiggle room on the setbacks to give us a little more developable area in any given parcel. It means we can get a few more units on, provide housing for a few more families. And also on the heights. it's not that there's been a dramatic change, but there's been enough of a change to give us more flexibility, say with the form of a roof or to build on a land that is a little bit slope just because of the way that the heights are calculated in the bylaw. We have some more flexibility on our housing forms, which means that we can provide housing that supports a more diverse group of tenants or housing that is more diverse in the types of tenants that it can support.
Yeah, and you know, on the topic of financial support from the government, I think a lot of our listeners are familiar with the CMHC MLI Select program. A lot of my clients that don't necessarily provide affordable housing take advantage of that program and then, you know, are providing affordable housing units in their developments. So from your perspective, like, what do you think of the MLI Select program? Is it enough? Is it helping? You know, how does it benefit home ed?
MLI Select has been a game changer for the entire industry and is continuing to support the supply of both market and affordable housing in Edmonton. For home ed, it's allowed us to purchase tens of millions of dollars of units and then rent them affordably. And they're financed under MLI Select loans. We're a major user of MLI Select loans in Edmonton.
What about other programs that can be used to provide affordable housing? I mean, obviously MLI Select is the one that I think most people know about, but are there other programs that you take advantage of that help with funding projects?
Absolutely. MLI Select is an insurance program that anyone can take advantage of. The federal government recently announced additional funding, though, into the Apartment Construction Loan Program, ACLP. And that program is designed to support the construction of more rental units. It's direct lending from CMHC rather than an insured product like MLI Select. It's a little bit more rigorous to go through the application process with CMHC, but there are really significant benefits for developers who are using it to build new purpose-built rental apartment construction. The other one that we use, which is more focused on purely affordable development, is the Affordable Housing Fund for New Construction. It's also direct lending from CMHC, and we're using it to put 91 townhomes into the ground in about a month.
Wow.
So we're really excited about that program. And it has some great benefits for affordable housing providers.
And that's specific to affordable housing, right? That one?
That one is for not-for-profits.
Okay, versus ACLP, like nonprofits can take advantage of that, but so can private developers. Is that correct?
That's correct. The Rundle project that I mentioned earlier, we purchased from a private developer that financed it through ACLP. So they designed the project, qualified for the project under ACLP, and then we were in a position to buy it afterwards with the benefit of that really strong funding support. We stepped into their shoes in the loan, and it was a win-win for everybody.
That's amazing. So many wonderful opportunities that exist now for the affordable housing context in, you know, not just in Edmonton, all over Canada. And it's great to see that, you know, we're responding to this crisis. You know, I wanted to at first say growing need, but I think at this time it's appropriate to say that this is a crisis in Edmonton and, you know, in other cities in our country. So very, very informative. Jonathan, this is wonderful to listen to you, to hear on what Home Ed is up to and what to expect. Allison and I like to do towards the end of these episodes is get our guest speakers to do a call to action to our listeners. So if there's any one last takeaway for them from this episode, the floor is yours, Jonathan. Feel free to give them some advice.
Thanks, Lila. Two things. First, go learn more about affordable housing. Go read the City of Edmonton Affordable Housing Strategy. You'll learn a lot, and it might be something you can use in your next project. The other thing is, keep building. What's keeping Edmonton attainable and affordable is good supply of quality housing. So keep building great projects to make sure that all Edmontonians have access to housing.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jonathan. This is such a great conversation. We're so happy that we got you on the podcast to talk more about affordable housing in Edmonton.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's been such a pleasure.
Thanks, Jonathan. So that was a pretty cool conversation we've had with Jonathan today. One of the favorite things I've learned, I think, from this episode is just realizing how many sub-industries of affordable housing there are, ranging from below market rates all the way to temporary housing or temporary shelters. And also, ranging from a varying set of users. And HOMAD, the ranges were quite general for the affordable housing providers. But, for example, HOMAD here, they only cater to specific users and specific type of affordable housing products. So it was insightful to learn.
Yeah, he has a lot of knowledge about this facet of our housing industry, I guess. And it was just really great to hear from him and shed some light on some of the trends and his expertise. One of the things that I found the most interesting was that one in eight Edmontonians are in core housing need. It was actually higher than I was expecting it to be. And I think it's just good for everyone to understand that this is really important that we have affordable housing provided in Edmonton, and that when we think about the people that are in core housing needs, it could be your neighbor or the person mm-hmm. that you see working at the grocery store. It's just like an average Edmontonian that might be in core housing need. Yeah. So kind of moving on, let's get into talking about what's going on in Edmonton. Are there any events coming up in the city, Lilith?
So with IDEA specifically, we've got the IDEA Refill with Infill happening on May 7th. And the theme for that event is transportation choices as a catalyst for development. This event will feature some great speakers. We've got Michael Jans, Ken Snyder, and Carrie Hott McDonald. And that's going to take place at Iron River Surfaces.
You can check out the IDEA website as well as the social media to register for that event. So I encourage you all to come. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think there's something else happening as well, right?
Yeah, so the IDEA AGM is coming up on May 23rd. So that's a Thursday, and that'll be from 4 to 5:30 p.m. at Homestead Coworking. And of course, it's free to attend. So if you want to find out what's been going on with IDEA for the past year and what's coming up in 2024 and 2025, come check out the AGM.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to go to the AGM last year, but I think it also took place at Homestead, and I heard it was a good time.
Well, to be honest, AGMs are, there's always like a bit of it that's a bit dull, but there are parts of it that are exciting when you talk about like what things that the IDEA will be prioritizing in the next mm-hmm. year. Those are the exciting pieces.
Yeah. As far as AGMs go, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, we got beginning of May an IDEA event, and at the end of May, we got the AGM. So maybe we'll see you there. So I think that brings us to the closing of our episode. And I'd just like to remind our listeners that you can find IDEA at infilledmonton.com, as well as on Instagram and X at infilledmonton, and on Facebook at infillyeg. The podcast episodes are on the IDEA website. You can also subscribe to them wherever you get your podcasts.
We also have a dedicated podcast email. So if you have ideas for topics you'd like to hear about or potential guests, send us your thoughts at podcast@infilledmonton.com. Thanks for listening. My name is Allison.
And my name is Lilith. Catch you next time.